Okay, we're starting our Chaim Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim. A lot, just besides the Arachayim, there's a lot just in the Parshios of Achrei Mos Kedoshim. Kedoshim by itself is Rav Gufei Torah Tluyin Bo. You know, Rashi says at the beginning of the Parsha that the majority of the essence, the essential aspects of Torah are dependent upon Parshas Kedoshim. You throw Parshas Achrei Mos into the mix, how much more so? So again, just want to pick out just a few ideas. Start with an Or HaChaim page Kuf Chaf in these editions, which is in Parshas Achrei Mos, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Dalet. And just to read the Pesukim at the beginning of that Parsha, Pasuk says, Vaydavra Hashem Moshe Leymar, God says to Moshe, saying, Dabo B'nai Yisrael, V'marta Leyam, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. You should speak to B'nai Yisrael and tell them, I am Hashem, your God. You should imitate the ways of the land of Egypt where you dwelt. You should not imitate the ways of Eretz Canaan, the land into which I'm bringing you. Don't walk in their paths. You should rather carry out my laws and safeguard my decrees, just following the Art School translation, Loleches Bohem, to follow them, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I'm Hashem your God. So the Or HaChaim comments on this last pasuk, pasuk Dalet, as follows. Kosher. Achar she'in medaber elo b'pritzos ho'arayos maha chukim v'hamishpotim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu osanu. The Or HaChaim earlier, in a piece which we're not going to see together, talks about what Kemasei Eretz Mitzrayim uChemasei Eretz Kenaan means. The earlier pasuk speaks of not following the ways of the land of Egypt that you came from, or the land of Kenaan that you're going into. And the Or HaChaim says basically what it means is the various different arayos, the various different prohibited relationships. And that seems to be the simple pshat in the Chumash itself, even though it's not quite spelled out, because immediately after this introduction, we're given the whole series of arayos, all of the prohibited and this incestuous relationships, which are also. So notice this is a parsha which is talking about arayos, which is talking about prohibited relationships. So if that's the case, so what exactly is meant in Pasuk Dalet by Mishpatai and Chukosai? My laws and my decrees. Not so much my laws and my decrees. Stay away from these particular arayos. Gam. So that's question number one. What's meant by mishpatai and chukosai in a more narrow sense? Gam. A second question. Mai kavanoso ba'omro leleches bohem. What's meant by the phrase to walk in them? Right? And that's to follow them. So literally to walk in them. I mean, that whole phrase could have been taken away without doing violence to the pasuk. Es mishpatai tasu, es chukosai tishmeru. You know, carry out my laws, safeguard my decrees. The term, the phrase leleches bohem, to walk in their ways, is extraneous. Doesn't really seem to add anything. Gam tzar ludas loma chazar pam beis loma ani Hashem Elokeichem. And finally, says the Or HaChaim, at the end of this pasuk, it reiterates, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. I mean, we just said that at the end of pasuk base. Da'avro b'nei Yisrael b'marto aleihem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Again, the truth is, I'm not even sure why you have to say it once. Right? I mean, by this time, in Sefer Vayikra, we already realize that Hashem is the God of the Jewish people. But certainly to say it twice in such rapid succession seems hard to understand. B'nira l'farish. One could perhaps explain as follows. The fima shikosavnu b'somuch sh'amach shovah ba'arayos tagdila chetetz u'semayit menias ha'rotza. You know, when it comes to arayos, when it comes to prohibited relationships, not only is the relationship itself asa, but thoughts of a prohibited relationship, right? Concentrating, obsessing about a prohibited relationship is also an equal part of the issa. In fact, the more a person fantasizes or dreams about a prohibited relationship, the harder he's ultimately going to find it to resist that particular temptation. So Chosha Kosuf Shiyomer Ha'odom Lisrachik Makol V'chom Miprat Zeh. So the pasuk there, because of the fact that preoccupation with intimate matters might very well bring a person to violate arayus, the Torah here was concerned about a person going to the other extreme. Let's call it the Catholic extreme. Let's make the Catholic extreme. The Catholic position that, if relationships can get you into a lot of trouble, so a holy person should swear them off, a life of celibacy. Right? And a person might be tempted to say, this is such an area of life which is fraught with difficulty. So, vivato missus period viridia. So the person will say, I won't get married and have children at all. I'll forget about the mitzvah of having children. Or mitzvah sayibum. Or where a situation of yibum, of levirate marriage comes up, so he might decide he's not going to do that either. V'chadome. V'parosh mimin zel chalutin. And he will separate himself from any kind of intimacy entirely. Sha'amru chazal eber katan yesh ba'odam aspi orayiv ma'ivol soveya. After all, don't chazal say that there is a certain organ in the human body where if you starve it, it becomes satiated. But if you feed it, it becomes hungry. Of course, the reference is to the taiva, to the drive that the person has for matters of intimacy. The more you feed that drive, the more you want. So a person might come to the conclusion, he's going to swear off anything that has to do with intimacy altogether. So Rachai, based on that, is very interesting reading in the pasuk. What it says is mishpatai ta'asu, which implies that you should fulfill my positive commandments. Ta'asu, the lashon of asiyah, of doing something, doesn't imply that you're refraining from something. It implies that you're doing something proactively. So how does doing something proactively fit in with the passion of arayus? Arayus is all about losaseh. It's all about restraint. So says the pasuk as follows, according to the Arachayim. I know that I'm about to command you to refrain from all kinds of prohibited relationships. So you might think that the Torah has no room in it whatsoever for anything having to do with intimacy, anything having to do with those types of relationships. No, there are various mitzvahs that pertain to intimacy, that command a person, under the right circumstances, to engage in an intimate relationship. The mitzvah of Kruvu, the mitzvah of Yibum. So as Mishpat Haitasu, be careful to do those mitzvahs, and not to turn off that whole element of one's life altogether, coupled with, as chukosai tishmeru, my chukim, which he understands as my prohibitions, tishmeru, guard them. In other words, strike the balance. Don't engage in prohibited relationships, but at the same time, don't do away with those commandments that we have, which relate to intimacy. I don't think so.
Is there a reason for arayus?
Yes, I don't think the Arachaim is learning Mishpat and Chok in the way in which it's often used. Mishpat, where we understand the reason. Chok, we don't necessarily understand the reason. You should know, there are other Mefarshim who also give different interpretations to Chok and Mishpat. I mean, as kids, that's how we always learned. A chok is something you don't understand, a mishpat is something you do understand. But that distinction is not borne out by all the mefarshim. Here, I think the way the Arachaim is understanding it is a mishpat is a mitzvah asay, and a chok, at least in this context, is a mitzvah lo sase.
One more question.
Yeah.
I haven't read the experience yet, but when he went back to Israel and he went to Abinalech, he said to
serve his sister.
Right. He was afraid that they would kill him.
Right.
It seems that they wouldn't let him live. They didn't take him, Sarah, and she was his wife. So it seems that they were. There was some kind of religious marias.
Right, there was a certain degree of Sahiris Barayas, but.
To say that this was the epitome of sensuousness.
Right, I mean. There was a certain Sahiris with Arayas, but only up to a point. I mean, after all, Had they found out that she was an Eishes Ish, the response wouldn't have been, oh, okay, sorry, we won't touch you. You know, the response would have been, okay, we'll make her ice Eishes Ish by killing her husband, and then we'll take her. Okay, but you know, even the taking her at that point is a certain licentiousness. You know, even if she's an unmarried woman at that point, by virtue of their killing off the husband, you know, it does speak to a certain, taiva, which they feel that they need to indulge. I don't know if the pasuk by saying Kemaisa Eretz Mitzrayim means that there were no, you know, mores whatsoever in Mitzrayim. But again, they were very low. You know, there was, you know, maybe a sense of what they had to do in the public eye, but it was very, very low.
What's the Rav HaKaim teaching us here? I mean, he's saying follow mitzvahs.
Right, but in other words, basically the mitzvahs strike a balance, meaning on the one hand, there are mitzvahs that prohibit intimate relationships of various different types. On the other hand, the Torah doesn't tell us that we have to swear off the idea of intimacy. Right? So one might have come to that conclusion. One might have said, well, you know, there are all these intimate relationships that we're not supposed to have. So the ideal is to separate from a life of intimacy altogether. No, that's not what the Torah wants. Es mishpatai ta'asu, the mitzvahs which we should do, well, not just mitzvahs in general, says the Aruch Chaim. The pasuk is telling us that davka those mitzvahs which command us to engage in intimate acts, a mitzvah like kru urvu, to have children, to procreate, a mitzvah like yibum, you know, that in certain cases one would have to marry one's widowed sister-in-law, right, the mitzvah of yibum. So these mitzvahs tell us that there's a place, an important place in Judaism for intimacy, even while we're observing the strictures against, you know, types of intimacy which are prohibited. Right? So it's not just that's the Aruch Chaim's question. You know, if the pasuk is just telling us keep mitzvahs, that doesn't seem really to be in place. The pasuk is reinforcing that we're supposed to keep certain types of mitzvahs, even though the tone of this passage in the Chumash is very anti-intimacy. It's not anti-intimacy in general. It's just anti-intimacy in the wrong context.
Isn't Yibam the brother-in-law?
I'm sorry?
Isn't Yibam the brother-in-law?
Well, he died. The brother-in-law. The brother.
The husband died.
Right.
So she has to marry, supposedly,
her brother-in-law. Right, so that's his sister-in-law. Right. Okay. Oh, Yomar. Right, so that's one interpretation. Es mishpotai tasu ves chukosai tishperu. Oh, Yomar, another interpretation of this pasuk. Ki be'emtzos shmiras harayus yimtzu hachono b'nafshosu l'mkai mitzvus asei ke'omro mishpotai ta'asu u'shmiras kol halavin ke'omro chukosai tishmeru. The Aruch Chaim says, I'll give you another pshat. Again, here you see he says explicitly, Mishpatai means mitzvahs asei, Chukosai means mitzvahs losa asei. But here, says the Aruch Chaim, I think you can interpret Mishpatai and Chukosai as referring to mitzvahs asei, mitzvahs losa asei in general, not just the prohibit, not just mitzvahs that have to do with intimacy. But the way to read the pasuk is as follows. How can you ensure that you are an Erlich Jew? How can you make sure that you're Shomer Shal Torah mitzvahs properly? The key to true frumkeit is zihirus ba'arayus, is care and caution when it comes to the whole area of arayus, of prohibited relationships. Right? If you're careful about that, the other mitzvahs are going to fall into place. If you're not careful about that, everything else is going to tumble like a house of cards. Right? So this pasuk is just telling us to keep the mitzvahs. Why is it telling us to keep the mitzvahs in the middle of Parsha Arayus? Because the way you'll be able to keep the mitzvahs in general is to keep the Parsha Arayus. Right? Masha'en king. On the other hand, im yasiv ma'asof b'derech ahu, if you make yourself disgusting and abominable in this sense, in other words, you're not careful about the laws of prohibited relations, your soul will become sick with tumah, with impurity. And you won't really be able to fulfill any of the mitzvahs properly. Kitumas chet zeh mashre tuma al kol evari ha'adam ekochosof. Because when a person sins with regard to arayos, it fills up, it brings tuma on every aspect of the person, on all of his limbs, on all of his abilities. V'kevon shekein kol alavi lo yimna mehem ki b'chol eivet tumaso go. If every eiver, if every limb in your body becomes tame, so to speak, it doesn't mean tame in a literal halachic sense, but in a spiritual sense, if the failure to observe the laws of arayas brings tuma upon every single part of your body, so mimela, your body is going to be preconditioned to do averos. The way to set yourself up for tzidkus is to be careful about arayas. The way to set yourself up for a fall, for rishus, for not being a shomer Torah mitzvahs properly, is not to be careful about arayas. The truth is, this idea from the Ora Chaim, that in other words, the question of your relationship to arayos will make or break the rest of your life as a religious person, in some sense, might be what Rashi is saying in the very beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. Right? What does Rashi say? The Pasuk says, Kedoshim to you, you should be holy. What's the definition of holiness? So Zot Rashi, Tevu Prushim Minu Arayos, you should be careful. You should, you know, separate yourself very, very much when it comes to illicit relationships, you know, of intimacy. So, why focus dafka on that? I mean, that's the only definition of Kedusha, right? In other words, there are no other barometers that we have to measure the Kedusha of a person, the Kedusha of his lifestyle. And the answer, I think, goes back to this Ora Chaim. There are other ways to measure Kedusha. Right? You could have a person who's very involved in Torah study. You could have a person who davens with tremendous hislahavos. Right? You could have a person who's involved in chesed. But in the end of the day, all of those acts are going to fail if the person is not careful when it comes to arayas. Right? To put this in a slightly different fashion, again, I don't know that this is exactly what the Ora Chaim is saying, but unfortunately we see this in our contemporary society more times than we care. You know, how often does it come out that you have somebody who is renowned in public life as being Choshev Talmud Chacham, you know, an Osek B'Tzar Chet Sibur, and then all of a sudden there's a scandal? V'dayi l'chakim abiramiza, I'm not going to go into it more than that, right? But there's some kind of scandal. The scandal, of course, involves something having to do with arayas, and it's all over. Right? The guy's unmasked. You know, there's nothing to talk about afterwards, right? In other words, that failing that this person has in the area of arayas brings him down like nothing else can, right? Again, a person who's careful with arayas can achieve levels of tzidkus. A person who's not careful with arayas will be sucked down into the gutter. Be very, very careful about how you approach this particular area of life, the Ora Chaim is telling us, because your shmiras ha-mitzvahs will rise or fall depending on how careful you are with regard to arayas.
Does arayas encompass pedophilia?
Yeah.
It sounds like this is very much a
kept trait. Right, it's interesting, right? And there's treif also, you know, is the town famous halev.
I also heard something about being kaddish by
Macholos. Right. Well, it's interesting. The I don't know if Rashi uses that, but it's interesting. When the Rambam authored Sefer Kedusha in his Yad HaChazaka, Sefer Kedusha basically focuses on two areas of life. Isurei Biya, right? The prohibitions against illicit relationships, and Macholos Asuros, and prohibited foods. You know, so right. I mean, the Rambam said that the key to Kedusha lies in what you do with two particular Eivorim, you know, two orifices, you know, of the body. And, you know, here, the Ora Chaim is emphasizing the idea of Yisurei Biya, but, you know, it's equally true for the idea of kashrus as well. Right, so, I mean, the truth is, in the end of the day, obviously you have to be observant of all the mitzvahs.
But we see people who are showing mitzvahs, you know, and yet,
and you have many examples there.
Right.
Right. So it's a very good question. Again, just to repeat the question, you know, why not emphasize the inyan of, you know, being honest, of integrity, where there also, if a person's not honest, doesn't have integrity, it can bring him down. I think, and again, you know, what I'm saying is not meant in any way to exonerate the people who are dishonest or lack integrity, but I think, you know, why the Arachaim is focusing Davkar Arayis is for the following reason. Arayis touches upon a very deep level of taifa, which can become difficult to control. Because at a certain point, a person who has a taifa for Arayis almost has an addiction, which in a certain sense he can't stop. And that addiction then spills over to everything in his life, where at a certain point it's almost uncontrollable. I mean, there's an earlier piece in the Arach Chaim, the piece right before this, where he actually speaks about the fact that, you know, on a human level, it's almost impossible for a person not to give in to his taivas, because the drawing power of taiva, especially for these inyanim, is so great for a person. And again, Chazal tells us that Gadol Ish Gadol HaYetzer, you know, as the bigger a person is, the bigger Yetzirah has specifically for Arayos, you know, on a certain level, it's almost impossible to stand up to the pull of Arayos. So the pull of Arayos, you know, will pull the person entirely in this direction of sin. It will spill over to the other areas of life, whereas the lack of honesty, lack of integrity, as terrible as that is, it may be something that he can ultimately back away from, you know, somewhat easier, that he can back away from a taiva that's pulling him in the direction of Arayis. That's what I would suggest the difference might be. Right. That's true. Right. 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 And again, you know, the point is not to condone a lack of honesty or lack of integrity, but in other words, in terms of the effect on the person. I mean, the Arachaim is not focusing on the effect on society. In terms of the effect on the person, I think, you know, again, just experientially, I think a person can more easily walk away or reform himself when it comes to lack of honesty, lack of integrity. It's much harder for a person who has real taifas, you know, to reform himself and to change himself in that way. I mean, again, in a very different context, you know, sex offenders are not easily rehabilitated. I mean, that's built into certain provisions that we have, you know, in secular law, because the understanding of secular law is that once a person has a predisposition towards certain kinds of offenses, it's very difficult to anticipate he's going to change them. We do assume, you know, both in secular law and Mahavdil and Halacha, that a person who is an offender when it comes to issues of honesty and integrity, business ethics, he can be taught to change his ways. I mean, you know, he'll do time for whatever offense he committed, but then, you know, he can go back into business. You know, there is a sense of rehabilitation. Much harder when it comes to these inyanim of arayas for the person to fully rehabilitate. It will seep into his very consciousness.
But look how the Torah looks upon arayas, the inyan of sotah and everything else, the punishment.
Yes.
It's far greater than, you know,
right. It's bad. It's bad. Right. You know, arise is bad. Arise is a terrible, terrible thing. Right. So,
but one other thing, the idea of arise, I have, within the marital relationship, we're not talking about that.
No, so Nida is also one of the Arayas.
Okay.
The person who's not listed here in the list is the person who's not careful about the laws of Nida. You know, and that's true with his own wife. So in other words, that's also, you know, part of this idea of Arayas. If he's not careful in his own marital life with Nida, so that also is going to have a trickle-down effect into his Shmiras HaMitzvos.
Okay. But the discipline upon which a person imposes on oneself. Okay, so sure, that's one thing. You know, a man and a woman, a husband and a wife should be very careful. But how about the other extreme of being too disciplined? I mean, I'm wondering, you know, we see a lot of that in today's Jewish culture extreme separation between men and women. I'm wondering, is that a reflection of trying to be careful of not entering into illicit relationships?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, right. That's, you know, again, where you draw the line exactly, different communities obviously have different, you know, different approaches, you know, to this. Maybe it was two different approaches from two different sides of the building. But, you know, but yeah, ultimately, I mean, wherever you are on the spectrum of orthodoxy, yeah, we do believe in having a certain degree of separation between men and women, precisely for that reason, you know, precisely because Arias is something which is, you know, which is a real pull on people. I mean, and the tendency to be a little bit overly friendly with somebody else's spouse, is a real problem. It's not a made-up problem. It's not a, that's a frummy thing, you know. That's a real problem.
That's where we have Ichud.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, one has to be very, very careful with these and younger. Look, the truth is, again, they didn't ask me to speak in Citi Field or anything like that, but, you know, the issues that we have always had throughout history are magnified tremendously by the internet and the ease with which people are able to communicate with one another and feel that they can be very open and, you know, disclose things that they would never disclose in a different context. And it's a double you do. I mean, marriages have fallen apart because of the internet. I'm not one who, you know, says, and therefore we have to ban the internet. We have internet at home. You know, I mean, I don't think that the world could function nowadays without the internet. You know, you'd be turning back the clock in a way which is not going to work. But at the same time, you know, we have to be very, very cognizant of the fact that there are real dangers associated with the internet. And, you know, people have to be very, you know, there are all kinds of, you know, screenings and, filters, you know, that I think are very important, you know, for a family to have when it comes to the internet. And people have to be very, you know, the social media, you know, the Facebook and the Twitter and that kind of stuff. I mean, the Derech Klal, I really believe there's a lot more bad in these things than there is good, because it ends up creating these false social relationships that don't really have any meaning. They're a tremendous waste of time, at the very least. And at the most, you know, mamish, you know, people's marriages have fallen apart because, you know, somebody met somebody online, and all of a sudden, you know, they're running off and going somewhere else. I mean, it's a scary world in which we live.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is all true. This is all 100% true. But at the same time, ultimately, the decision of where to draw that line is a very individual. It's a very individual choice. Of course, we're learning here that maybe we should draw the line a little more firmly against certain types of behaviors that would lead to illicit relationships, and I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, I have to say that it seems to me that you know, that line is a line that is drawn individually. It's not. You know, it's hard to impose a universal discipline on everybody.
Right. So I would say as follows, just speaking personally.
Right.
I'm very respectful of the fact that different people draw the line in different places. I'm very wary of those people who don't have a notion that there's a line.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of what is out there is people don't have a notion that there's a line at all that has to be drawn. Again, you put the line over here, you put the line over there, you know, so okay, within certain guidelines that different strokes for different folks and different communities operate differently, and what's totally normal in one community is totally bizarre in a different community. And again, you know, that's okay, you know, that's part of the spectrum of the firm community in which we live. But people have to realize that there is a line. People have to realize that there is a line, and unfortunately a lot of what's out there is people don't realize that there's supposed to be a line. By the way, I'm not letting the quote-unquote very frum community off the hook. You can have separate entrances to a wedding hall, but then go home and everybody's talking to one another via social media. I'd rather have people not talk to people, to other people, mm-hmm. other people's spouses via social media, and let them come into the hall in the same door, you know? I mean, you know, people have to have a sense of what's a priority. You know, you can have mixed up priorities also, right? But, you know, but there has to be a line. Now, people have to realize that there has to be a line some way, you know, in the way in which we relate to people, you know, who are not of our same gender. That has to be very, very careful.
A line not in the sand.
Yeah, right. Okay. So again, this person who's not careful about arayos is going to very, you know, will very likely not follow the lavin of the rest of the Torah. V'chei mitzvah saseh, right? And even his positive mitzvahs, like Amshe Yasal from Eizel mitzvah, ain, hear this, ain no mitzvah, ki lo yisrat sebah lo yisporach shemo. A guy who is steeped in arayos, even if he does positive mitzvahs, they're not considered to be mitzvahs in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Again, I don't know if he means they're not considered to be mitzvahs at all, but they're definitely lacking. You know, when the guy, again, to use a phrase which was not just a marshal but actually happened, which was a common source of discussion in the 1960s, when a guy goes on a date and takes his tefillin with him, right? So when he puts out the tefillin in the morning, you know, I don't know how that mitzvah, again, I'm not the Ribbono Shel Olam, but I don't know how the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at that mitzvah of tefillin when he's, you know, being mekayemet in the morning in the same place where he had the date, you know, the night before, Vamei Ben Yochen, right? I mean, it takes, you know, at a certain point, the mitzvah saseh is not even considered to be a mitzvah. As the Pasuk says in Tehillim, God says to the Rasha, what point is there in you describing and following my laws? God only desires those mitzvahs which are done in a state of Kedusha. A person who has so defiled his soul through arayas, even the mitzvahs saseh which he does, are not really fully acceptable in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Omro Leleches Bohem Yichaving Lo Ma'alidar Kenukim Min Chomer. So now we come to that phrase, Leleches Bohem, to walk in them, which again, the Ar Hainan asked at the beginning, what's the role of that phrase? It doesn't really do anything. Keep my mitzvahs and keep my mishpatim and my chukim. What's Leleches Bohem? To follow them. But now we can understand it. Ki kasher yeh ha'odom tar v'kodesh me'ateyuv. When a person is holy and pure from anything which is disgusting, yolid b'tivo l'kayem ha-mitzvos tamid. His zihirus, when it comes to arayos, will lead him to, will have a trickle-down effect, and will enable him to be careful about Torah and mitzvos in general. Al derech omro, as it says, chishavti d'rochoy, yoshivo raglai elegosecho. I count, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, I calculated my ways, and my legs always came back to your laws. V'darshu mazal shiraglim shal David me'atzmam ha'yoholachos l'beis ha'megrish l'tzad ha'hergo v'achevitz ha'nivchar. David HaMelech got himself so, you know, accustomed to doing mitzvahs. You know, he walked out of the house in the morning and without thinking, his legs automatically took him to the Beis HaMegrish, to the Beis HaKnesses. You know, it became habitual. You know, it became a source of habit for David HaMelech to just do mitzvahs. That's the kind of person that he was. If you sanctify yourself with arayos, so then loleches bohem, the performance of mitzvahs will be a natural outcome of the fact that you're careful about, you know, this inyan of being careful about arayos. So this is the beginning. This is the haschala to a life of Shmiras Torah and Mitzvahs in general. The way you are with arayos will influence whether you're going up or whether you're going down. Od yichavin v'omer l'leches bohem al derech masha omer anovi tzidkas ha-sadik lo tarsilenu b'yom pisho shem yeh tzadik ho-yomo v'yashil v'asof harezeh hifzik z'chuso v'lo yilech imo b'yom lechto l'olam ha-elyon v'zeh tziv ha-shem v'omer l'leches bohem pirish yasmid b'mais matov v'shmiras ha-chukim. Another interpretation. The last one was also homiletic. This is even a little bit more homiletic. Leleches bohem, to walk with them, says the Ar HaChaim, means to walk with them to the next world. Right? The mitzvahs that a person does in this world will enable him to walk, to travel into the next world without difficulty. If a person follows mitzvahs for his whole life, but then at the end throws it away and decides he's not going to do it anymore, that decreases his chances of getting into the Olam HaEmes. There's no grandfather clause when it comes to mitzvahs. You can't say, look, you know, I put in 70 good years, so let me just enjoy myself for the last 5 years and do whatever I want, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will forgive me. No, there isn't such a concept. Lalechas Kohen, the mitzvahs are supposed to accompany the person throughout life, so that then and only then will they be able to accompany the person into the next world. A person should not anticipate, should not look forward to getting the schar for mitzvahs in this world. The schar for mitzvahs is primarily in the next world. To walk with them implies that the schar is going to go before them. And as the schar that the person is going to get is something lo leches for him, that he's going to use them to, you know, to get schar in olam haba. He shouldn't be obsessed with the notion that he's going to get schar in olam hazeh, because it may or may not come.
The thing with lo leches, and the seventh sota we're learning now, is that the mitzvahs precede us.
Right.
And the averis follow us.
Right. Right. And so the mitzvahs are going to precede him into the next world. He then goes on with this idea of lo leches for him to explain a very well-known pasuk. Od yirtzal derech omro kiner mitzvah v'sora or. Pasuk says that a mitzvah is a candle and Torah is light. In what sense is a mitzvah a candle and the Torah light? Ki olam ha'elyon rochok b'mahaloch uva'at. Because you should know, so to speak, the next world, the heavens, is a ways away. It's a long way to travel from down here to the Olam HaElyon, to the upper realms, you know, to heaven. Uva'alos nefesh ha'adam me'olam hazeh la'olam ha'elyon im hu rasha derech v'shoyim ka'afela. So imagine, you know, as a person travels from this world to the next, imagine a long dark corridor. You know, that's the mashal that he gives. And as the neshama travels up to the next world, it doesn't just go straight. You travel through darkness, and you're going to have to negotiate your way to the next world. You need a flashlight. You need a candle to negotiate this dark pathway until you get to the next world. You know, there are all kinds of descriptions of you know, people who have near-death experiences where, you know, they experience death, and they feel that the soul came back into the body. And inevitably, when they talk about those experiences, they always describe how when they got to wherever they were getting to, they experienced this great light. Right, that's a common... that's a common denominator. They always talk about a great light. But says the Arachai, yeah, but before you get to the great light, there's a great darkness. And it's the light at the end of the tunnel. There's a long tunnel you have to go through before you get to this great light. So the Rishayim experience it as a dark tunnel. Uvelechus adam kosher. But when a proper person goes into the next world, mitzvahs v'tara shabiyado me'irim lo. The mitzvahs and the Torah that he has learned and performed in this world, they light up the path for him. Right? Your word is like a candle at my feet, and it's like a light guiding my path. Shakavono hu. Liyoski yesh baner masha'in ba'or v'yesh ba'or masha'in baner. There's a difference between the candle and light. How so? Ki aner yesh bo b'chino gedola me'or k'shiyah karov. A ner, a candle, is a focused light. V'lozemur razal shabdika sachomet sricho b'layla l'or aner sh'aner yov l'bdika v'achnisa b'charov istokin ma she'enkin b'or. That's why we dafka do b'dika sachomet using the light of a candle. Right? We don't do it during the day when there's a lot of natural light, because although there's natural light and that lights up a greater area, but the candle, the flashlight, whatever you're using, is a focused light. That's a ner. It focuses in. It's very concentrated. The yesh ba'or b'chinah gedola me'aner. But on the other hand, light, diffused light, has a certain quality which is greater than a candle or a flashlight. Shiro l'me'rachok. Because the candle, the flashlight, can only help you see what's right in front of you. The or, the diffused light, let's say the natural light, can help you see a distance away. You can't see with precision, but you can see with greater distance. So whenever we talk in Tehillim about mitzvahs being both a ner and an or, it means that the mitzvahs provide illumination for us over the long haul. They give us vision, long-term vision, that's Ur. They also give us focused, the ability to see something with clarity and focus, you know, in the immediate sense. That's the idea of the Ner. Right? We have the sense of vision, and we have the sense of immediacy as well. So that's what the mitzvahs are described over here as loleches b'ohem, to walk with them. To walk where? Pirish ba'orom yeleich, shimlokim b'chashecha yeleich. The mitzvahs that a person does in this world illuminate the dark tunnel, which is the passageway between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Otherwise, v'lo yedav b'mei kosheil, otherwise it's going to be dark, and a person might stumble, rachmana litzlan. Loleches b'ohem is describing the passageway from this world to the next. And one last point. On Yir Saldar Fashomar Tano Eloki Rav Shimon Bar Yochai Olav Hashom. We quote the Zohar. Right now, we've often heard of this the Zohar quoted, but here he gives him the source. Ki Ramach Evrei Ha'odom Ushisag Yidov Hem Kineged Mitzvah Saseh V'lo Saseh. The 248 limbs that a person has and the 365 sinews correspond to the 248 positive mitzvahs and 365 negative mitzvahs. V'asosa ado mitzvah ba'oso eber shenaseis ha-mitzvah shorego shebavayim yisporach. When a person does a mitzvah with a certain eber, with a certain part of his body, when a person does a mitzvah, so the name of God in some way attaches itself to that eber, attaches itself to that limb, which is associated with the mitzvah. Ki ha-mitzvah, here he says the following beautiful idea, ki ha-mitzvah hi osi ha-shem havaya, because the word mitzvah is really the same word as yud-kei vav-kei. Now, you say, wait a minute. How do you get that? So listen to the following. Ches yo megula. Right, the second half of yud-kei vav-kei and mitzvah are mamish the same letters, the vav and the hey. Right? Yud ke vav ke, mem sadi vav he. Right? So the vav he, the second half, is exactly the same. For who sowed almo this galya? Right? Just like there are certain things in the world that are revealed. The chetz yom mechusa. But the first half of the word mitzvah corresponds to the first half of Shem Hashem, but in a hidden way. Sowed almo this kasya. Just like there's a certain world where things are not revealed to us. How do you get from Mem Sadi to Yud K? Ki osios Mem Sadi ba'atbash heim Yud K. Because there's a system known as Atbash, which goes back to the Tanakh itself, where an Aleph is interchangeable with a Tav, and a Shin is interchangeable with a Beis. Right? That's the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, refers to Nebuchadnezzar as the king of Sheshach. What's Sheshach? Sheshach is Bavil and Atbash. You see, the Tanakh itself has a notion of this code of Atbash. If you take Mem Sadi in Atbash, so it comes out to be Yud Ke, right? So in other words, Mitzvah is Yud Ke Vav Ke, just somewhat revealed and somewhat hidden. We know that God and His name are synonymous. B'sod Omer Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. So now you realize that when you realize that mitzvah and yudke bavke are really the same word, when a person does the mitzvah, he brings the Shem Hashem, yudke bavke, into his very essence. That's really what our pasuk means. When you do mitzvos, mishpatim and chukim, loleches bohem, to walk among them, that doesn't mean that you're going to walk in the way of the mitzvos. It means that God is going to walk in you through your performance of the mitzvos. A beautiful, unbelievable pshat, right? Ushvartem chukosai, es mishpat haitasu es chukosai tishmeru, follow my mitzvos asay, my mitzvos losa asay, loleches bohem, in order to enable Hashem to rest, to walk in you, Bahem, through the performance of those mitzvahs. Because, and that's finally, he explains, why does the Pasuk then go back and say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God? We spoke about that earlier, just a few psukim ago. Because there appears Miwa Oleich Bahem.
Then it goes back afterwards and says, okay, who's the leleches for him? Who is going to walk in our midst through the performance of mitzvahs? The Omer Ani Hashem. Okay, you Omer, a leleches Ani Hashem bohem. The way to read the pasuk is really as follows. Follow my chukim and my mishpatim. Loleches Ani Hashem bohem. Right? You put together the last phrase and the next to last phrase. Through the performance of mitzvahs, I, Hashem, will walk in you, will be a part of you, through the performance of mitzvahs. Who sowed the Shochanti B'Socham? That's when the Pasuk talks about the Mishkan being a vehicle for God dwelling among us. It's when we do mitzvahs, Hashem, you know, I don't want to say literally, but almost literally, comes into our very essence. U'kefiza yirza omer bohem kipshata. Right? When we person does a mitzvah, so that's how we enable HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come in through us. The mitzvah is the same osios of Yud Kei Vav Kei. That's what we're going to read in B'chukosai just a few weeks. I will walk, says Hashem, among you. Right? Through the mitzvahs, I become a part of you. And then Va'atem had Vekim. Hashem Elokeichem Chaim Kochem Hayom. You who cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu are alive today. How do you cling to Hashem? Mitzvah brings Yud Kei Vav Kei, you know, into your bones through the mitzvah.
My mom
Right.
Why would the Yud-Kei be the one that
the Hindu have in the book? It's an excellent question. If Yud-Kei is all about this world, right, so why should that be exchanged for the Mem Sadi as opposed to the Vav Hei? I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't have a good answer. Okay, that's Hashem. We'll pick up next week, Wednesday night. We'll be back to the regular schedule. And meanwhile, let's try to do mitzvahs and cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to walk among us.
Shine the light.